Today, you will find out that we are pretty good in fantasy, not as good at making preseason World Series predictions.
We are.
Who is, Adam? Who is? Vegas?
Not
actually,
me.
Actually, I think I was better this year at the preseason predictions, but that's more of a comment on my fantasy season.
Oh, come on, Al. Really?
Yeah, really.
All right, all right. Well, today, you're in review a little bit. Now, before the season started, we made our baseball picks, and we will kind of review them later on in the show. I, of course, going to talk about some news and notes, take some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and let me formally welcome everybody to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. If you're still listening, you are a dedicated, dedicated fan, and we thank you for it. We hope your season was great. We are once a week, every single week throughout the off season. Don't hold us to that in case we have to take 1 week off here or there. But we're going to try. We're going to try.
Hey, January, we might start doing two or something, right?
Maybe. I think, well, definitely by February.
February.
I think probably late January is when we start two a week. Yeah. Congratulations.
So you can actually maybe hold us to more than once a week.
What, during the rest of 2015?
No. Yeah. Yeah, 2015. Just once a week.
Once a week? Yes, thank you for not putting any more pressure on me, Scott. And congratulations on winning the podcast league.
Yeah, thank you. That's 4 out of 6 years.
That's amazing. You are the king of the head-to-head points format. I will bow down to you. You lucky, or no, you talented, no. Talented fantasy analyst. Hey, let's talk baseball real quick. Now, I don't consider it the playoffs unless you win the wild card game. But that said, I'm going to a playoff game tonight. And I'm very excited.
Because, well, then it you're assuming the Yankees win, though? If they win, does it count as a playoff game in retrospect?
No. It is, by everyone else's definition, I'm going to a playoff game tonight.
And it's a playoff game if you're there.
Yes, exactly. And then I made this joke on the football podcast. I'll make it again. And then I'm going to the next Yankees game in early April.
Because they're going to lose.
100% going to lose.
100%? How can you say that?
Dallas Keuchel.
It's a single baseball game.
Dallas Keuchel, I'm doing this off the top of my head. 2 starts against the Yankees this year. 16 innings, 1 walk, 21 strikeouts, no runs.
That was off the top of your head?
Well, I looked it up yesterday. So
okay. At
mid-season form.
Yeah, you were so struck by the fear that it's just gripped your memory cells.
Who knows what's going to happen, but of all the postseason predictions, Astros winning tonight seems like the easiest one for me. What about you guys?
I can't have any one game be the easiest prediction because it's like anything could happen.
Yeah.
Tanaka could throw a shutout. Why not?
Nah, too many home runs against this team. It's just a terrible matchup.
He's had games where he doesn't give up home runs.
Nah, not so much lately.
I will have to agree, actually. Yeah, it's hard to be that confident in any one game, but it seems like the Astros would be clearer favorites here than anybody else would be in a game or series that is currently on the schedule.
The only thing is that Keuchel's pitching on 3 days rest, and we don't know what that's going to be like.
You know, I just wish this game was in Houston, because that would make that Seinfeld clip when George is dealing with the Astros front office all the more relevant, because you remember what George says?
No
Yankee is ever going to Houston.
Well, you know what? The other thing, Al, if it were in Houston, it wouldn't be a playoff game because I wouldn't be there. So you shouldn't wish for that. Now, tell me, guys, who's gonna win tonight? Your official pick?
Yeah, it's the Astros.
Yeah.
Who's gonna win tomorrow?
I hope they win. Because
shut up.
I think it'd be much more interesting because they're a better team.
They are. Yeah.
Astros Royals. What a great series. What a great matchup that would be.
Yeah.
Who's gonna win tomorrow?
I think Cubs.
Yeah, it'd be kind of funny if that was the game where Jake Arrieta couldn't keep this going anymore, this ridiculous pace he was on to end the season. If this wild card game is when a team finally gets to him. But yeah. I'm going to predict that won't happen. And he'll outpitch Garrett Cole, and it'll be the Cubs.
Kind of the reverse Shelby Miller, huh? He waits till the last day of the season, and he finally gets a win.
Oh, that's Shelby Miller. He's so annoying.
So I'll say the Cubs as well. And that means we got Astros, Royals. Who would you take there?
Royals.
Yeah, I'm going with the Royals too.
Okay, agreed. And Blue Jays, Rangers.
That is the easiest prediction of the postseason.
I was not thinking ahead.
No, it's not.
That is definitely.
Oh, come on.
Tonight is easier.
I don't even see how the Rangers got in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they mash. And let me tell you something. They're an average offense against lefties, but the Blue Jays don't have Burley on their postseason roster. They're only starting one lefty. They are incredible against righties. They're going to hit. They're going to really
hit. That lefty is David Price.
Yeah, they're going to win the Price games. They're going to win the Price games.
Okay, well, just how good are the Blue Jays? How good is the Blue Jays lineup against everybody?
Oh, the Blue Jays are great. But the Rangers could really hit, man. Like, they might have a better lineup 1 through 9. You know, like, more balanced than the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays have an overall better lineup.
I guess, but... The Blue Jays lineup was so far ahead of every other lineup that it just seems it just doesn't seem like you can compare theirs to anyone else.
Well, I will certainly pick the Blue Jays. So, okay, we're at Blue Jays Royals. ALCS.
Blue Jays.
Yep.
Do you think the home field advantage matters? I just wonder if the bigger park will neutralize the Jays a little bit. The athleticism of the Royals comes more into play. I think it was really big that the Royals got home field advantage, came down to the last day.
Yeah, I think they would have had a very tough time with Toronto having the home field advantage. I think this literally and figuratively evens the playing field a little bit. But, yeah, it's, you know, Toronto's rotation was a question mark after Stroman got hurt. But with him back and the acquisition of Price, Estrada, you know, revitalizing his career,
Dickey finished strong.
Yeah.
I mean, Burley won 15 games this year. He had a pretty typical Burley season, and they just don't need him.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he didn't, Scott, because he only threw like 199 innings.
All right. Well, as far as the percentages, it was actually on the good end of a Burley season.
That was the saddest thing on the last day of the season.
I know. Yeah.
And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, he did pitch well, but his defense didn't do him any favors.
Right.
But, yeah, I think the Blue Jays are the more balanced team, and They'll win even with not having the home field advantage.
If you missed it, the Blue Jays tried to get Burley 200 innings for 15 years in a row.
Yes,
and he pitched on Sunday. Did he pitch on Friday or Thursday?
Pitched on Friday, so wow. He was going on one day of rest.
And he needed 2 innings, so he couldn't get out of the first.
Yeah,
so he just falls short. Okay, we all like the Blue Jays to win the AL. Although I'm trying to think, I might try to be different here and go Royals. Can I come back to that one? I'm going to come back to that one.
You're the host.
Just to be different.
We got Mets-Dodgers. Mets-Dodgers. So interesting. Can't wait for this.
I can't either. And I don't know. I'm thinking Mets. It's just a hunch. And I guess if I have to back it up, I mean, obviously it's hard to imagine any team scratching out runs against the Dodgers rotation, but...
Top two.
Top two anyway, right. But that's, you know, a huge advantage. But,
yeah,
you know, Mets starters,
series.
You know, just a run or two could you know, be enough with the Mets starters. And I look at that Dodger lineup now, and it was so fearsome in the first half. And I look now, and nobody really scares me.
Corey Seager does.
Yeah, probably him more than anybody else. But Agons, Grandal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Puig.
You know, Jack Peterson was horrible down the stretch.
That could be a really good series.
You know, what kind of a role is Yasiel Puig going to have?
That's a good question. I would assume he'd play. He was able to return the last game of the season.
Yeah.
Like Al said, they need all the help. Their lineup needs all the help it can get.
I'll tell you one thing about this series that, you know, the Mets were so bad in the last week and they lost home field, and now Syndergaard probably going to start. Have they officially announced it? He's going to start game two, or is he just?
Yes.
I'm not necessarily buying the home road thing with him. I kind of feel like those stats just, like his last two road starts were incredible. Granted, they were at Atlanta and at Cincinnati, but 7 innings combined, or 14 innings, 14 and two thirds, 3 earned runs, 19 strikeouts, 1 walk in his last 2 road starts. So I'm not really worried about him on the road in game 2.
I totally agree with you on that.
I think I'm going to go Dodgers.
Yeah.
Because of Kershaw and Greinke, and particularly if they each pitch twice, it's just That's going to be too much for the Mets to overcome.
I agree. Al?
Yeah, no, I'm still going Mets.
Mets? I missed that. Sorry. All right, and then we got Cubs, Cardinals.
Whew. I mean, I want to be Cubs.
They burned Arrieta already at this point.
Yeah.
So he's going to start later. Game three or
game
something.
Game three, probably. Yeah.
You know what? I'm thinking Cubs. I don't, and part of it, I'll admit, I maybe underestimate the Cardinals at a base level because I don't see them as a better team than the Cubs, even though they clearly finished in first and had the best record in baseball. And, you know, since then, they've lost Carlos Martinez, who would have been their second starter. I don't think Adam Wainwright's going to be available except out of the bullpen. So it's going to be a lot of John Lackey and Michael Wacha, who had a bumpy finish.
Yep.
And just not the kind of power arms that you normally think of dominating in the playoffs. And obviously the Cubs have the big, powerful bats. So I think they'll be able to get to those pitchers and Cardinals will be ousted in the first round.
I think it's a gutsy call. I'm gonna piggyback on it because as many wins as the Cardinals racked up during the year, they're another team I just don't understand how they managed to be that good. And you know, for all the reasons that Scott made in terms of the Cubs pitching, I think being at least equal to the Cardinals and the offense being better.
It's really tough because the Cubs I think should be a better team, but the Cardinals, they won 100 games. You know, and they didn't exactly slump at the end when their pitchers weren't pitching well and Carlos Martinez got hurt. They just keep on doing it. They keep on winning. Now, they did lose four of their last five, six of their last seven. Maybe that's a concern for those
games. I mean, to put it in perspective, the Cubs won 97 games.
Yeah, I know.
I think we can point back to a date. I don't know exactly what date it was where they were, like, even better than the Cardinals, a much stronger for an extended period of time. I wish I had the exact date, but they had a really good record from this date forward kind of thing.
Right. Well, all right. I guess I'd have to take the Cubs. I think they're a better team. And that means it's Cubs Dodgers. I'm going to take the Cubs to the World Series and I'm going to let you guys do the NL first and then we'll give the World Series picks.
Yeah, well, I've got Cubs-Mets, and I think it really hinges on how the Mets' young pitchers do, because I think the Cubs are a little vulnerable beyond Arrieta and Lester.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw what the Mets' lineup is capable of doing in the second half, even though they didn't finish that strong. Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm taking the Mets.
Yeah, I've kind of backed myself in the corner here because I'd really like the Mets in a 7-game series, but I had them getting bumped into 5. So, I'm gonna go Cubs. Madden effect.
But either way, Cubs Blue Jays or Mets Blue Jays, that's fun.
That is fun.
Either way.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Royals.
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 Wow. That's not bad either. Not the usual suspects.
Yeah. Any way you slice it, there's going to be a lot of blue on the field.
Yes, and I will have the Royals getting redemption and winning the World Series.
That'd be a great story.
You know, in my less lucid moments, I guess, I kind of assume, what am I trying to say? I forget that the Royals didn't win the World Series last year because there's so much talk about them all the time. I feel like that's what happened, but of course it didn't.
This is a fantasy baseball show, right?
I think so.
So let's talk fantasy. But let's get your predictions. Did you guys give official World Series predictions?
Winner, I'm going Blue Jays.
Me too.
Blue Jays, Royals. All right, good
and
play,
I'll
American
go
League.
Blue Jays in 6.
Oh, he's picking a game number.
Ooh, ow.
Wow.
Take out the extra step.
Royals in 7.
I'll go 6, Blue Jays.
Another game 7 for you Royal fans. Congratulations. Injuries, news, and notes. Ryan Braun's going to have back surgery, and Craig Counsell says he doesn't expect it to affect him. Is that going to affect you guys going into next year?
I think I'm just going to be very cautious about Braun next year, no matter what. You know, that, I thought that was one of the more interesting debates that we had going into the season. Scott was more bullish. I was more bearish. And I think he probably wound up somewhere sort of in between our expectations after April. I mean, Braun was definitely better, but still a good way from his prime form. And you know, still had his injury issues, obviously, you know, with the back. So even though it's not supposed to affect him, yeah, I don't imagine I'll be drafting Ryan Braun a lot unless he falls in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that maybe that was kind of a harsh assessment considering he was a steal away from a 25-25 season. Saying that when you were talking that way like a month ago before the back injury, mm-hmm. I had him as like a second rounder in fantasy. And now that we know he's actually going to have a surgical procedure now on the back, which anybody who's had back surgery would probably tell you not to have back surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me nervous. It might drop him to like a fourth rounder, actually.
All right. How about, Robinson Cano, sports hernia surgery? Sometimes a guy struggles or whatever, and then you find out he was injured. But this injury did not coincide with his slumping at all. It happened in July, and he was really, really good from that point forward. So I don't really know if there's much to make of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it obviously can't really be a good thing, I think, at least initially. Maybe, you know, over the course of the year, he'll heat up, but, yeah, I don't know about Cano. I mean, I'm just not totally won over by the second half that he had because the power was sort of bunchy. And I do think that, you know, we can rely on him to be a good hitter for average again, but at second base, I'm not sure that that's really enough anymore. So yeah, I will have him outside my top five second baseman most likely.
Which isn't. It isn't a big stretch either way you go, other than Altuve, and he only sort of regained that standing towards the end of the season. Other than Altuve, there isn't really a standout second baseman. Dozier threw Kinsler or Cano or whoever you want to put at the back end of that group, Kipnis. They're all kind of. You don't really trust them to put up elite numbers, but you know they could. Cano actually was the only one of that group that actually finished strong, but I agree with you that we've seen enough reason to be discouraged the last couple years that a hot streak toward the end of the season isn't going to win me completely back.
And Adam Wainwright is back. Is there anything that you could see this postseason that would make you think, oh, I want Adam Wainwright next year?
I doubt it, just because, as Scott said, he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen. That's every indication that that's what he'll do. And so even if he completely dominates in that role, didn't Lincecum do great in the postseason?
I don't know if he did great.
As a reliever?
He did pretty well, yeah.
I mean, just, you know, as an illustration of how success in that role doesn't necessarily translate to being a dominant starter. So no, I can't imagine what Wainwright could do to increase his stock.
Yeah, I mean, increase it, but it's going to be pretty high. It's not like he's going in like Lincecum.
No, and I don't mean to suggest that whatsoever.
I imagine I'll draft him probably in the same neighborhood as like a Jordan Zimmermann next year.
Okay.
Provided there's no setback or anything.
Yeah.
Stinking lousy Jordan Zimmermann. I don't have to gripe about him anymore. So let's talk fantasy. How'd you guys do this year? What worked? What didn't work? Let's just sit back, kick back, and have a nice fantasy discussion. Scott, Podcast League champion, you can kick it off.
Oh, do I have to talk about that league specifically,
Adam?
No, it just wins you the honor of going first.
Yeah. Well, I think when I look at my Podcast League team, and we'll go ahead and start there, my first two pitchers I drafted were John Lester and Jacob deGrom. And I traded John Lester very early in the season for Carlos Carrasco to get who in my mind was the top SPARP, which left me with Jacob deGrom and a bunch of what you wouldn't think of high-end starting pitchers in fantasy. There was a lot of Jaime Garcia,
Colin McHugh,
yeah, and Jimmy Nelson for a while. I was mixing and matching there, basically, hot hand. And it worked, obviously. And there was a lot of, obviously, my offense was good. I mean, I had both Votto and Encarnacion and Altuve and wasn't really weak at any position. So it's not like you can make that work without a dominant offense, but it's just, there was some departure for me at the start of the year, going as light on pitchers as I did in the past. And I still think that's true. I don't think you can go as light as I used to go because there's so much opportunity for other players to set themselves apart with the dominant pitching staff since there's so many more dominant pitchers. But I think you can go too far the other direction still and overemphasize that and, it could just backfire on you.
Now, I want to look at your outfield.
Okay.
Your outfield in the final week was Mookie Betts, AJ Pollock, and Jason Wirth. So I don't know who else you drafted. You have Corey Dickerson on your bench, actually, the last week.
I did not draft Wirth or Dickerson. They were both pickups.
You have Hunter Pence.
Who I did draft.
It seems like you probably waited at least 4 or 5 rounds before you drafted an outfielder. At least.
I could actually pull up the draft results, but I think you're probably right. Remember coming into the year, I was super high on Betts.
Yes.
But also Gregory Polanco, Jorge Soler, Rusne Castillo. None of them really paid off, but it was something I was doing frequently, passing up outfielders early to load up on those middle round high upside types.
Your first outfielder was round 10, Mookie Betts. Round 10.
Wow.
And you
round
know what?
10.
And that's kind of bringing me to my point where I think I screwed up in that league by having two, my outfielders were incredible. They were McCutchen, Brantley, and I traded for Carlos Gomez. But, they were at least on paper incredible. But I think, the leagues that I had the more success in, 3 outfielder leagues, or I had a 10-team, 5 outfielder league. My infield was better than my outfield, and I just kind of plugged and played outfield. It's just easier to do that. So in the podcast league, I wish I had prioritized infield more. That's a lesson I'm going to try to carry into next year. 5 outfielder league might be different because the position isn't that deep, but 3 outfielder league, I think I want better infielders, and I'll be able to figure out outfielders, pick up the Dexter Fowlers of the world and try to win it that way.
I think that's generally true, although this year there were just so many second basemen and shortstops who emerged who were really viable. And I'm looking at my roster, and towards the end of the season I picked up Yanhervis Solarte, and, I wish I had done it a lot sooner.
But the thing is, those guys emerged, but I honestly feel like they emerged so late that a lot of owners were probably out of it.
Well, Logan Forsythe was undrafted, I'm assuming. And,
he established
himself very early on.
It's always guys.
It's there's so much in a points league in particular, so not to take us too far down that path specifically, but you have to devote so much of your bench space to pitching depth that it's hard to, it's easy to miss out on the Logan Forsythe of the world when you're not completely buying into them in April, but somebody who drafted a weaker second baseman has to pick them up, and so you just don't even really get a chance at them if you don't get someone you can genuinely trust at those infield spots.
All right, Al, any lessons you learned this year? Anything you want to discuss?
Yeah, well, I did a whole column on it a few weeks ago, picking up on a topic you raised in the podcast here, FOMO, and kind of thinking about how that applied to my relative lack of success this year. But before I get into that, I didn't have a good year, and I think I invested a lot in players that got hurt. I had a lot of Corey Dickerson. I was, if you remember back in March, I was, you know, super high on him.
Yeah.
So I was way too invested in him. I was very invested in Giancarlo Stanton. George Springer, another player that I really loved, back in the spring. So that's part of it. So I guess maybe there's a lesson there in terms of just diversifying. But beyond that, the pattern that I noticed, and this goes far beyond this season. So it's a strategy that didn't work for me this year, but has worked for me in the past, which is really being extremely patient and having a lot of faith in my long-term, assessment of players' value. And this year it just completely backfired on me. And there were several instances across different leagues where I just hung on to players way too long. And in the podcast league, I think that was definitely the case with Jose Reyes, where it took me way, way too long to realize that he had really fallen back to the pack. And there was, and I had opportunities to trade him and fill needs, particularly pitching, and miss those opportunities. So, you know, I talk about FOMO, and I probably should have had more of it, and not been as worried about, giving up on the upside of the players that I drafted that I thought that they had. And just being more flexible in making trades and adds and drops.
I find it very hard to win a fantasy league without making at least one trade, a good trade, unless you're in a league where just nobody ever trades. But, I think it's crucial.
And I think it's more than that. I think it's, you know, just in contrast, I mean, Scott's an extremely active owner. When I look at, some other owners that I play against, like, an example that stands out is Fred Zinke of MLB.com, who's in Tout Wars and won it again this year.
Oh, wow.
Third time in 5 years.
Wow.
The mixed auction. And also extremely active. And I mean, you know, obviously you don't just want to trade for the sake of trading, but it's trading, you know, very aggressively because you're really, you constantly have your finger on the pulse of the landscape at every position and who's rising and, you know, and who's falling. And so it really just requires a constant attention to what's going on.
Okay.
Which is why you have sources like this podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
To keep you informed of what's going on. No, that's actually, I mean, that's one of those things that just came so inherently to me in terms of playing fantasy, that it's not something I've ever really thought to vocalize. At least maybe not in that broad way. I think maybe I've touched on some more specific aspects of it in the past. But, I mean, it's, you have to really remove yourself from this baseball analyst and statistician, or, you know, thinking along with what a real life GM would do. You kind of have to remove yourself from that mindset, because fantasy baseball is a very different thing. And you know, a lot of it depends on format, how aggressive you can be. But if you're in a typical standard size league, everybody's adding and dropping players constantly, and usually based on what's happening right now. And so there's really not a lot of harm. There's not a lot of harm you can do to your team by dropping a player who hasn't lived up to your expectations. Even if you have confidence he's going to bounce back, he's just not going to be on anyone else's radar when you drop him. So you can just let him sit out there and pile up the hot hand plays, and you know, maybe he picks it up later, and one of those hot hand guys you picked up falls off, then you can swap him out then. And I'm not saying you'll never get burned doing that, but you're going to get burned a lot more not doing it because everyone else is doing it.
This was an interesting year, because one of the lessons that I've previously learned was completely shot down this year, and that is, don't go crazy over prospects. But, you know, I finished second in both of our roto leagues. Scott won one of them. Heath won the other. And the one that Scott won, I think the season really turned around when you got Schwarber and Sano. They kind of carried your team, not just them, but they were huge parts of your team in the second half. And I don't know what to do. This was a great, great year for prospects. And I feel like even with Correa and Sano and Schwarber, et cetera, I'm probably hitting prospects, not pitching prospects. I'm all about pitching, but hitting prospects, I'm still going to be a little hesitant to buy in despite what happened this year.
Well, it's when you buy in is a key aspect of that, because I did not draft Schwarber, Sano,
right.
Or I don't know if I had Correa in that league. I had Carlos Correa.
I think I had Correa in that league. But no, you're right. You pick them up.
There came a point in the season, and in Roto League roster sizes are usually big enough that you just have a bench spot and you don't know what to do with it. And okay, who's the highest profile prospect who's not owned, and you pick him up, and that's now, is it going to work out as well as it did this year, which I think is the point you're getting at? Well, no, but there's just not a lot of downside to it, because the guy you're dropping is, you know, probably like a fourth second baseman for you or something else.
Well, maybe, yeah.
And without much value.
Yeah, and to underscore that point, I mean, not only are, you know, you likely paying a cost that's not, you know, a significant cost, but like I think of the case of Corey Seager, who I really, you know, I mean, I obviously knew about the incredible potential that he has and that he showed this year in the minor leagues, but I still just didn't see the fantasy value because I thought, where is he going to play? And we looked at, you know, the pattern with Alex Guerrero never getting a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, this is just going to be a waste of my time.
Well, for a while, we did that with Kyle Schwarber, too.
That's
where is
right.
he going to play? That's after his initial call-up. I don't even know that I got him before the initial call-up. I may have gotten him because somebody dropped him after Miguel Montero came back. And, oh, well, Schwarber's not going to play. He got sent to the minors, actually.
And that's a great example. And, you know, so in both cases, the talent won out, even though every indication told us it wouldn't. And in Schwarber's case, one of those indications included talking to Schwarber himself at the Futures game and him saying, yeah, they're sending me back to the minors to work on catching. And, you know, so even when you go directly to the source.
Yeah. So don't believe anyone, including the players themselves.
So, yeah.
Well,
so
talent wins out,
by the talent.
Yeah, but Adam, to kind of further this point, and I don't know how many really deeper league players we have listening, but the AL and NL only Roto Leagues, which we do with people from various sites. We host it and play with people from other sites, and really deep leagues, the deepest leagues I play in, 12 teams, 30-man rosters, single league. I had never really shown well in those leagues. I mean, I might finish like fifth or sixth. I think maybe I had a second or third finish before, but over a 7-8 year span, that's not really that impressive. I won both of those leagues this year, and I think one of the mistakes I've been making in that really deep format is investing too much in guys who I thought were going to get called up at some point during the season, and they don't necessarily have to perform like a Miguel Sano did to make a big impact in those deeper leagues, but they do have to get called up sooner than later, because you know, if you're getting two or three of those guys, it's an auction specifically. So if you're getting two, three of those guys to fill out your lineup and there's no waiver wire there for you to fill in the gaps in the meantime, you're just taking zeros. And, you know, sometimes, a lot of times those guys don't get called up soon enough to make up the ground.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance for sure. Some other things that I'll say that work for me. Starting pitcher, I always have this philosophy. This year, third base, we kind of identified as a deep position on draft day. I don't like taking bust candidates at those positions. I understand taking maybe you think Robinson Cano is a bust candidate next year, but you don't love the second base pool or something. I understand you want to take him earlier, but at third base, there were three guys that I avoided in all leagues. That was Beltre, Longoria, and Zimmerman. And actually, I'll throw in a fourth, Todd Frazier. So I was wrong about him for sure. Beltre finished strong, but probably sunk you if you played in a league with playoffs, because it took him too long. And Longoria and Zimmerman were hurt or disappointing. So my strategy is always like, if you're deciding at a deep position, like if it's starting pitcher and there are two guys you want, just don't take the guy that you think has any bust potential. It just doesn't make sense to do it at positions with a lot of talent. So
unless they've already been passed over enough because of that bust potential.
Yeah,
you could get some values
fall.
That way.
Sure, yeah. So I always subscribe to that. I remember a few years ago, it was like Sabathia I wasn't taking because he had shown some signs, and that was the year he kind of fell apart. So Okay, that's my thought on that. Any final strategy pieces here, tips that you guys wanted to cover?
You know, one of those roto leagues that I won, the mixed roto league that you referred to earlier, Adam, it was an auction. And if I remember correctly, I did not purchase a single closer.
Which one? And, the Memorial League?
Yeah. In the auction. And I didn't finish first in saves, but from just picking up whoever emerged off the waiver wire, I finished in the middle of the pack in saves with guys like Brad Ziegler, John Axford a few times, Roberto Ozuna. There's so much turnover there, and we talk about it every year. And I think every year, Adam, you always try to make a case for the opposite. But
well, excuse me.
As long as you have your finger on the pulse, like I was saying, and you're going to pay attention and act quickly enough to pick up those players, you should get enough to be competitive in the category. I'm not saying you should aim to not draft any, but you don't need to invest so heavily in the expensive ones who a lot of times end up being just as susceptible to losing their jobs anyway.
All right, you did not purchase, you did not bid on any closers. You did draft Ken Giles, Pat Neshek, LaTroy Hawkins, and Grant Balfour in the reserve draft. We had a 7-round reserve draft after the auction. But
none of them probably would have stayed on my roster the whole season.
Well, Giles did.
I'm not sure he did stay. I may have ended up with him still, but I think there's a good chance I dropped him at some point because it took a while for Papelbon to get traded.
I have finished first and second in that league over the last 3 years. So I think my closer strategy in that league ends up being pretty good. I never spend a lot on closers. I never get the elite guys. I get three guys who I think have a very good chance to keep their job that I can get out of a $260 budget for maybe like an average of $6-$7 each. And that works for me.
You know, I like that, except the $6 or $7 each. I think I usually aim for $2 or $3 each.
Yeah, then you're not.
Which is probably why I ended up with none in this particular auction. But sometimes you do.
Handling closers is one of the things I did this year. I think I actually did probably better than I've ever done, because while on the one hand there was so much turnover and you had so many opportunities to get saves really cheaply, you just had to be on top of the situations. You also didn't get burned too often if you invested in the guys who seemed like they had the best shot to be really good this year. So yeah, if you invested heavily in Greg Holland, that didn't work out that great. But you know, the guys who looked like they were going to be really good were really good.
Not Kimbrel.
Really played too much about Chapman.
Kimbrel wasn't up to his usual standards and probably didn't justify the price tag, but he still ended up being one of the top closers in fantasy by not the same margin we're used to.
The only guy who was considered an elite guy going in and lived up to it, I would guess, would be Jansen, because got him at a discount because of the injury. But Chapman just didn't get enough saves, wasn't his fault. And Kimbrel wasn't quite Kimbrel. Holland was obviously a huge disappointment.
Yeah, the guy that I targeted the most was Zach Britton, and that worked out really great.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, you know, had a profile that, you know, looked like he was going to be, you know, a really solid closer. But he was really, for whatever reason, off a lot of people's radar relative to those other names we're mentioning.
And I think to further what Scott was saying, you don't have to win the category to win your league. You know, I think some people go a little bit crazy. You don't have to win steals. You don't have to win saves. Let's see how many categories Scott won. You came in fourth in batting average, second in home runs to me. At least I have more power than you, jerk. second in RBI to me. Third in runs. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sixth in steals. First in strikeouts. Third in ERA. Fifth in whip. You were fifth in wins. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth in saves. So you won out of 10 categories, you won only one of them. And you won this league going away. So I think that's kind of important. You know, have a good balanced team. You don't have to win saves. You know what I mean? I think I've made my point. You don't have to win a category, you know, or multiple categories to win a league. You kicked butt in this league. with a lot of balance. Hey, you want to? I got to go in about 10 minutes here. You want to revisit our preseason picks?
Let's do it.
Okay. I listened to the podcast that we did where we made our picks.
Oh, boy.
And there are some funny freaking quotes. Okay. Try not to read ahead in the notes.
Okay. I already did before.
I haven't.
Oh. Okay. Scott. Scott picked Baltimore. You said, I think the Red Sox have the most upside, but you took Baltimore. You picked Detroit in the Central. I like Shane Green at the back end there, he says.
Hey, that looked good for like two or three starts. Okay.
Yes, it did. And then you took Seattle in the West and you said, quote, just playing it safe there. Your wild card teams were the Red Sox and the Indians. You got zero. Zero. You did great in the NL.
Indians made it interesting at the end.
Oh.
Yeah, sure they did. All right.
Wow.
In the NL, you killed it. You did Washington, St. Louis, and the Dodgers, and the Cubs and Pirates wild card. Oh, but you got Washington wrong, but I can't fault you for that.
Yeah, so if I'd swapped in the Mets instead of the Nationals,
that's
that would have been the exact right answer.
And in the World Series, you said Washington over the Orioles because, quote, picking them because they're the AL team I'm most confident about making the playoffs.
Yeah,
on Baltimore.
Yep. Yeah,
hey, man, I agreed with you. So did Al, at least on in the East. All right, Al, you agreed with Scott's argument about Baltimore having the least downside. You picked them to win the AL East. This is the best quote on Cleveland winning the Central. Quote, I'm actually pretty confident with this one. And then you went on and on. Oh, wait, I have more. You said, I'm actually pretty confident with this one. I said, I don't see it, guys. I don't see it with the Indians. And Al, you said, I feel like I don't have to qualify the Indians' chances. And in the West, you picked Seattle, quote, by a pretty good margin. And the wild card, you had the Angels and the Tigers, but you said you could see the White Sox or the Royals potentially sneaking in.
Yeah, the sneaky Royals.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, through the back door.
So we struggled
by the
with
way,
the AL.
I mean, we didn't do the full standings on this. But we had them in the written form beginning of the season, and I had the Royals fourth in the AL Central, ahead of only the Twins, who finished second. So I almost had that division upside down.
Al, in the National League, you said Washington, quote, I don't think that requires a lot of discussion. Pittsburgh to win the Central, Dodgers to win the West. Great call on the Mets wild card. Great call, but you said they were just barely better than Miami, and you picked St. Louis, and you picked the Nationals over the Indians in the World Series. I love Baltimore too. I kind of trashed the Vegas over/under, which was 82, and the they went 81-81. I have Kansas City in the Central and the Angels in the West, and I had Detroit and Seattle with the wild card. So we did not do very well with the American League.
The AL, I remember going in, it seemed a lot tougher. So
yeah. And
I'll say that for us.
I remember I had a very hard time picking the wild card teams in the AL. And I really wish I had not gone with the Tigers. I remember not being really confident about that. I knew they had a chance to not be very good this year. I should have gone with that.
And in the National League, I had Washington, Pittsburgh, and the Dodgers. I had St. Louis and the Marlins to make the wild card. Oops.
Here we go, Marlins. Did you pick the Dolphins to make the playoffs, Adam?
I don't think I did, actually. I might have, but I picked Baltimore to go to the Super Bowl. How's that turning out? That was before Terrell Suggs got hurt.
That was a gutsy pick, Adam.
That was stupid. And I took the Nationals over the Royals. So at least I had the Royals. Can say that.
You're the only one who can say that, except I'm sure Heath Cummings, because he
probably
picked the Royals to do everything.
He picked the Royals to win the Cy Young, like the whole team. So I have to end the show, unfortunately. I apologize, but we didn't get to emails. We will get to them next week, I promise. Addison, Doug, Ben, etc. We will get to your emails next week. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I just made a FanDuel lineup for Tuesday and Wednesday. If anybody cares, I will tell you it right now. Hang on. It is.
I'm going to wait till the division series for that.
Okay.
Want a bigger slate.
It is Dallas Keuchel, Evan Gattis, Greg Bird, Rob Refsnyder, Alex Rodriguez, Carlos Correa, Brett Gardner, Colby Rasmus, and Dexter Fowler. Good luck.
Good
Goodbye,
luck to
everybody.
You. See ya.